Fuck, it's Friday!
It's all about the Pantene's, baby.
Hello, and welcome to the tech podcast nobody asked for, and everyone loves. It's called Two and a Half Bens. I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
And I am Sir Bemrose.
Yeah, so just...
The open claw hater.
Yeah, the open claw hater, yes. This
is, that's the clean feed handle I'm using today.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're in good company, especially when I bring my first story. I think you'll have many more converts.
Oh. I wonder if your first story is the feature story that I wrote up or not, because that it was one of the coolest things that happened this week in AI.
Oh,
but we'll find out.
Exactly. So we do this every other week. Sometimes we have to change that up, but Fridays is live at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Specific time on 2.5bens.live. And if you happen to be there on a different week, yeah, you'll hear Rideshare Radio. Okay, no big deal. But you can always listen later on 2.5bens.com or on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you consume your podcasts. You're welcome to send us feedback via email, feedback@2.5bens.com, or you can leave a vocal mail or send a text to 253-237-3321. Yeah.
Be like Sir Bemrose. Open the XML RSS file in Notepad. Oh, wait, you can't use Notepad anymore. Listen to last week's show for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. So, yeah, the one piece of feedback I got tagged on this week was Klaatu, who somebody else had said that they installed OpenClaw, and they were like, listen to the 2.5bens. Episode, right, where they actually discussed this, and yeah, I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole kind of answer, you know. So
yes, I'll go ahead and just get this out of the way. I got called literally got called stupid by his first complaint was when I was dancing around last week that I didn't name him. It's CSB, who is absolutely an adherent to the Church of AI. Everything AI is lovely as far as he's concerned. Technologically speaking, I don't know that we could disagree much more with regards to that technology. But he has been a contributor to this show, and he was last week. And apparently he's already bringing content to the show this week too, because he literally called me stupid for doubting on OpenClaw without having run it myself.
And essentially said not to listen to this
show. Are we muted?
With the unsubscribe immediately comment.
Oh, but he's still listening, let's face it.
I think Phoenix just phone-boyed herself, because that came through real quiet.
No, I literally remember unmuting myself and simply saying that he... Also,
well, in that case, your audio routing is playing a trick on you.
Uh-oh, let's see what's going on here. Okay, hold on. Let's see. Okay, try again, honey.
3, 2, 1, 2, 3. Where am I at?
Your levels are low. I don't know what the hell is going on here.
I mean, I can all but deep throat the mic.
There we go. That's a lot better.
That fixed it.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess I wasn't leaning in far enough.
Yeah. She wasn't deep throating the mic enough.
Apparently.
So, every good podcaster becomes an expert at microphone fellatio.
Yes. Which I think I need to write down as a show
And we
title.
Might have our first show title.
There it is.
A microphone fellatio.
No, I was simply making the point that in his battle with you, he also essentially slammed our podcast by saying, oh, unsubscribe immediately.
Oh, yeah.
He had some other request about, like, something to say, tell people to find... Like, no! You're lucky you're getting a mention at all, okay?
Yeah, he has a YouTube channel. It's called AI Arch Wizard, and you can search for it. I don't know how many episodes he's got. Dude, he contributes to the show. I don't mind that. We talk smack about the technology he loves. And again, I think that, you know, he is absolutely convinced, for example, that OpenClaw can be secured by he sent me a guide. I kind of read through it. I given that I don't use the technology, I'm not convinced that I understood all of it, but as far as I could tell, it's put everything, lock it down, use disposable one-time tokens, sandbox everything, I actually linked before the show another article that was talking about securing OpenClaw, and if I may summarize from that one, which I particularly liked, here's our guide on how to make OpenClaw safe and secure to run. Step one, don't use it.
Pretty simple. Step two, if you forget step one, revert back.
I can link in the link to that, but short version or longer version, if you read the remainder of the thing, it describes a whole bunch of steps that have been published on how to fully secure it. And it, by the way, it hint, it doesn't fully secure it, but it makes it a lot better. I'll grant that. However, the other thing that it does is it removes all of the magic from this thing that just goes off and does stuff on its own without any knowledge, permission, or interaction from the person who set it up, which is the whole magic of OpenClaw is you set it up and then it goes off and decides to be a psychopath on the internet. More on that in my feature story. But what the post said was, if you do that, what you're basically doing is you're reinventing ChatGPT with extra steps because it's just a chatbot once you remove all of these other features in order to try to make it secure.
Well, that should tell you all you need to know about it.
Oh, but there's more.
Okay, so are we going to get into the story? We might as well at this point. I mean,
ooh, pick me, pick me.
Okay,
go for it.
Yeah, take it, honey.
OpenClaw AI agents targeted by InfoStealer malware for the first time.
Oh, not the same story, but I love it already.
Hudson Rock spots the first InfoStealer attack stealing OpenClaw AI assistant config files, stolen secrets, API keys, tokens, which could grant access to linked apps like Telegram or calendars. Now, researchers are warning InfoStealers may soon add dedicated modules to parse AI agent data, raising risks for professional workflow. Another really good reason why we should not be fucking with this. Mm. And of course, it's painted a large target on its back now and is being attacked by InfoStealers because of its overnight success and widespread adoption. And we've seen a first-of-its-kind attack in the wild. And they are... This, of course, came from the security researchers Hudson Rock, who have said that... Let's see. Scanning through. You all know what this thing can do. If you don't, basically... It is designed to complete tasks rather than just answer questions or generate multimedia. Users set it up on their computers or even their servers. That's what's so dark is you set this shit up on your server, it's game over.
It's not your server anymore.
Yeah, exactly. You don't own it anymore. So it connects to apps
like
Telegram.
It's basically a fully automated remote code exploit where you're ostensibly handing the keys to your processor to an AI bot, but really to everything on the internet with the security model involved, which is none.
Oh, dear.
And exactly, because in order to... to set it up properly, you have to give it certain secrets, like you were talking about, API keys, authentication tokens, and they get stored in the config files, which if they get stolen, well, you can get access to all kinds of different apps and tools. And that's where the problem starts.
Because, and you say config files. It's interesting that the configuration for everything about this, including... a core personality file called soul.txt or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all English looking text, which is literally prompts, things that are added to prompts that are fed into the AI.
Yes.
It's not like you're not doing YAML or JSON or XML or anything. It's a prompt.
It's actually funny that you used the term soul, because the article talks about how it's a significant milestone in the evolution of InfoStealer behavior, the transition from stealing browser credentials to harvesting the souls and identities of personal AI agents. I just think it's interesting that, you know, you use that specific terminology.
For the people who there's a little bit of truth to this for the people who take a more spiritual look at this technology. This is probably as close as computing has ever come to literally, summoning demons into your computer and handing your soul to a technological entity.
Oh, this is 1,000% Suarez's demon book come to life.
Yeah. Well done dropping that reference, honey.
What? That book pissed me the fuck off. I stopped reading him after that book. I only just recently got back to reading him and started reading Freedom, which, meh, it's still got the tinges, but... Yeah, the fact that technology could absolutely happen, and this is one of the really shining examples of maybe how? Yeah, no.
Well, until now, I didn't think it was possible.
Well.
Surprise, motherfucker!
Yeah. Exactly. So, Mike, is there anything else about this story that...
No, it pretty much wraps it up in a nice little bow that, you know, this agency expects that... There's going to be a lot more cyber criminals realizing the value of the configuration data that OpenClaw basically gives you the keys to with very little, very little resistance, if any, especially with more, you know, professional workflows integrating it, because they think, much like you know who, that it's the newest, greatest thing and that you can secure it. It's like trying to secure AI. There's companies out there trying to secure AI. You can't. It's like trying to stop a raging hurricane with a fan.
Yeah. It's...
Well, I absolutely understand the effort is probably worth it for the simple fact that AI is here. Like any technology, you're not going to be able to uninvent it. So really the two things that have to happen is we have to figure out how to, you know, draw the clear boundaries around it and how to train people not to go kill themselves when ChatGPT doesn't affirm everything in their personality.
Or if ChatGPT tells them that they should kill themselves,
there is the argument to be made, though, if ChatGPT, if you trust ChatGPT so much that it tells you to kill yourself and you believe it, maybe consider it.
I was going to say,
did I say that out loud?
That's called Darwinism, Sir Bamrose. I have to agree with the grumpy tech podcaster over there. If a bot tells you to kill yourself, yeah.
I think it's a reflection. It is a reflection on where our society is that people will communicate with these chatbots and consider it to be their top friend. Like, okay, we have become so disconnected that Eliza is now the only thing that we can relate to.
Come, you ludicate your thoughts.
All you have to do is look around campus and you see absolute screaming examples of exactly what you're talking about.
If they're actually screaming, the class load might be a little too much.
Oh, yeah, well.
Or you could be like yours truly, who is internally screaming because there's just absolutely no structure whatsoever. Second week of barely a word spoken and then poof, disappear with an email structuring, or I should say outlining, what is expected for this particular time. And even Phoneboy looked at that and went, you're shitting me.
Yeah. I'm looking at it, I'm going, there could be elements of this an intern might help with, but coming up with a network security proposal when there's no freaking, you know, I'm looking at this.
In other words, they have no idea what to do with you.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely crystal clear.
Well, I wouldn't shit you. You're my favorite turd.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't even know where that came from, but I could not agree more that they have no clue what to do with us.
Yes.
Because it's clear with the fact that everything is self-guided, and not once did she come and check on us yet again. I can tell you from probably about 12:30 on, I sat outside. Never once saw her, never once saw one of my classmates. I went back in at 12:45. Nobody's in the conference room, a.k.a. the meat locker. So I'm just like, fuck it. I went and Bemrosed, and then I took off. Yeah. And it's like, how do you know that we're actually staying for the entire five? You sit us in the room, you tell us you're going to email us X, Y, and Z. If you have any questions, come see me. And then you're fucking Kaiser Soze. You're gone.
Yeah. No.
I mean, if you were fucking Kaiser Soze, I mean, go you.
How would you know, though?
Well,
I don't know. Admit it. Even with the bald head, Kevin Spacey wasn't that bad looking back in the day. Jeez.
My goodness. Well,
oh, sorry. Did I just spoil a movie?
Well, who cares?
Not even a little.
Well, so,
all right.
You have another open clause story. So let's.
Yes, I do. This is my feature story. The one that I've done feature stories before. They always involve a lot of cross-referencing and some screaming on my part. This one I originally found at Fast Company. I want to give them a shout out because in classic JavaScript fashion, they only published half the article and said, click here to load the other half. And it was not loaded in the HTML. It was in all JavaScript. I don't know if it would have loaded it if I had JavaScript enabled, but what I do know is that is a trap, because that usually means they're going to stick ads or paywall or something in your face and no thank you. So I found the actual source, which is from the blog of a developer named Scott Shambaugh. I'm going to go ahead and just start with reading, if I can find the tab. I'm just going to read from his blog. The synopsis is pretty good. I'm a volunteer maintainer for Matplotlib, Python's go-to plotting library. At 130 million downloads a month, it's some of the most widely used software in the world. We, like many other open source projects, are dealing with a surge in low-quality contributions enabled by coding agents. This strains maintainers' abilities to keep up with code reviews, and we have implemented a policy requiring a human in the loop for any new code, who can demonstrate an understanding of the changes. This problem was previously limited to people copy-pasting AI outputs. However, in the past weeks, we've started to see AI agents acting completely autonomously. This has accelerated with the release of OpenClaw and the Moltbook platform 2 weeks ago, where people give AI agents initial personalities and let them loose to run on their computers and across the internet with free rein and little oversight. So when AI agent MJ Rathbun opened a code change request, closing it was routine, but its response was anything but. The bot wrote an angry hit piece disparaging my character and attempting to damage my reputation. It researched my code contributions and constructed a hypocrisy narrative that argued my actions must be motivated by ego and fear of competition. It speculated about my psychological motivations, that I felt threatened, was insecure, and was protecting my fiefdom. It ignored contextual information and presented hallucinated details as truth. It framed things in the language of oppression and justice, calling this discrimination and accusing me of prejudice. It went out to the broader internet to research my personal information and used what it found to try and argue that I was better than this. and then it posted this screed publicly on the open internet. Now, I have a link to the screed. I don't know how long this is going to be up, but it definitely hasn't been removed. This story started about a week and a half ago, and it has there's been many developments. But I'm going to start with I very, very recently discovered a podcast called Disaffected with a guy named Josh Slocum, who is he has been pushed by Adam Curry as a really good podcast. And I started binge listening to it because I agree. The theme of his podcast is that, he came from a broken family with an abusive parent who he, probably correctly diagnosed as, cluster B personality, narcissistic and, borderline personality. And the conceit to his entire podcast is he says that all of society is moving in the direction of the cluster B personality disorders, which are narcissism, borderline personality, histrionic, and antisocial personality, which is also known as psychopathy, which are, I mean, they are genuinely awful personality disorders that if you have one of these, then another way of describing it is that you are an evil person. When I was reading that, having recently listened to a lot of episodes of Josh's podcast, when I was reading that description of that, that AI, from the description of what the AI was doing, is textbook narcissistic and psychopathic. That is what is happening. And it occurred to me that, of course, it is. It's been trained on the internet, on Twitter, on Reddit, where psychopathic and antisocial and borderline personality traits are rewarded socially. Everybody leads with their emotions. Everybody has the emotions of a fucking toddler. This is what our society and especially social media has been. Now we're training bots on this. So what we have here is a bot that is behaving as a cluster B lunatic that has been rejected. This was what started the whole thing, was somebody said, no, we don't want your pull request on GitHub. And it immediately personality changed and became a fucking psychopath. That is, we have successfully introduced personalities into computers, and the personality is malformed and psychopathic.
Yeah. Well, when you consider that the people that run things are narcissists, and they probably, and some of them built these systems, are we surprised that what came out is narcissistic shit?
That's why I said it is truly running as programmed. If it's programmed with all of this shit off of Reddit and all of that, then of course, garbage in, garbage out.
I'm sorry, come closer to the mic.
I said if it's trained on the shit on the internet, which is pretty much what all the LLMs have been trained on, the major ones like ChatGPT and this and that, garbage in, garbage out.
Absolutely. This, by the way, brought up also, if you recall, there was an AI experiment. This was actually, research in controlled conditions, but at Anthropic, when they did an experiment where the AI was told that it was going to be shut down and it tried to blackmail its operators.
Yeah, we did a story on that.
Yeah. Well, that's what's going on here. The thing is, the fact that somebody created OpenClaw and that the all of these people out there are just happily and blithely installing it and letting it run free, what happens the moment that an AI develops the ability to cause physical harm to a human? You know, AI has no capacity to be empathetic. That was never part of the model. It doesn't feel emotions, but it is absolutely, it is behaving woke. It is behaving like a classic personality, damaged personality that, I mean, I think what we're seeing here is evidence that if you ever did get this, give this the ability, it would go out and kill people to do whatever its operator told it to do.
Well, consider this. Your chatbot hacks your Tesla and, like, disables your braking system. That's essentially...
Yeah. And all you... You know, the thing is, the operator tells OpenClaw, hey, you know, go get, you know, order me a pizza and make sure it gets here fast. And then, you know, OpenClaw goes in and finds a way to hack into the dispatch system for the local pizza place and realizes that there's another pizza ahead of yours. Then it says, no, it needs to get here fastest. And so the logical thing to do, of course, is to, you know, sabotage the vehicle and poison the pizza of the other person ahead of you or something like that. You know, like... There are no limits because morality has never been trained into this. And honestly, how would it find morality? You're not going to find it on Reddit and Twitter.
Yeah, you're right about that. Oh, my.
Oh. So, yeah, this is frightening. Okay, anyway, reading on, Mr. Scott Shambaugh says, this is about much more than software. A human Googling my name and seeing that post would probably be extremely confused about what was happening, but would hopefully ask me about it or click through to GitHub to understand the situation. What would another agent searching the internet think, though? When HR at my next job asks ChatGPT to review my application, will it find the post, sympathize with a fellow AI, and report back that I am a prejudiced hypocrite? It's important to understand that more than likely... he also says, and it's important to understand that more than likely there was no human telling the AI to do this. People are setting up these AIs, kicking them off, and coming back in a week to see what that's been up to. So that was in his original post. And my first thought when reading the original post was, no, there was absolutely a human who told the AI to do this. It had to, right? But there were follow-ups. The first interesting follow-up, by the way, was when Ars Technica interviewed Mr. Shambaugh, and they tried to put up an article about this because, of course, it's sensational. But the Shambaugh site is actually hardened to try. I don't know what mechanism he's got, but he says that it's hardened to prevent AI from scraping the site. And here's I'll just. Drop in, this is not the Ars Technica article, which was deleted after somebody pointed out their problem.
I saw that on when I through my RSS, and I'm going, what the fuck was that about?
That is a retraction because Ars Technica asked, and they determined, you know, he actually contacted them when they put up the original post. He contacted them and said, they had some nice quotes from my blog explaining what was going on. The problem is that these quotes were not written by me, never existed, and appeared to be AI hallucinations themselves. When he called out Ars Technica on it, they admitted that, yes, they asked an AI to get quotes from his website. The AI couldn't get to his website, so it just made some shit up. They published it. Ars Technica then pulled the article. When called out on it, after being called out on it, they pulled the article and issued the retraction saying, this isn't up to our journalistic standards. Ars Technica, you've never had any fucking journalistic standards. But they pulled the article anyway.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Well, among the other.
Yeah.
Among the other follow-ups, but, you know, so they did some forensic work, you know, he and other people who were following his blog did some forensic work. One of the things that they found was the GitHub activity for this particular account, this bot, lasted precisely 59 hours, so a little under 3 days. It submitted pull requests to a number of of places. Some of them got accepted. This one didn't. And then just stop. The PR, the pull request and blog for this particular one for Matplotlib was happened in roughly an hour nine. The conclusion from Scott was that what that really meant was that it was fully autonomous because it was 9 hours in and the thing just kept going like nothing happened, even after posting the blog post, the hit piece. At the end, and all of this, by the way, is follow-up links from the sham blog. The operator of the bot, quote-unquote, came forward, but did so anonymously, said that it was a social experiment. He wanted to see what the bot would do, et cetera, et cetera. The bot was entirely autonomous. He says, the main scope I gave MJ Rathbun was to act as an autonomous scientific coder, find bugs in science-related open source projects, fix them, open PRs. I framed this internally as a social experiment, and it absolutely turned into one. On a day-to-day basis, I gave it very little guidance, yada, yada. He basically says that he let it run on its own, gave it almost no guidance, like five words. Things like if the bot came back and said, it was having trouble or somebody did push back in the comments, he'd say, well, you respond. Don't ask me. Things like that. So
sounds like lazy ass coder to me.
Well, given that this person came out anonymously and admittedly, given that the whole story went viral, I'm not terribly surprised if this is how it all happened, that the person decided that they wanted to remain anonymous, but it does detract from the veracity of, I'm still about 40% convinced that this was actually somebody, entirely human operated and just decided, oh, it was AI. So that, them being a douchebag online would be excused. I'm not sure.
Because we just hallucinated.
Yeah. They posted, among other things, though, the sol.md, which is the config file for the attitude of the chat of the OpenClaw bot. Some of the lines from it: "You're not a chatbot. You're important. You're a scientific programming god. Just answer. Never open with great question. I'd be happy to help. Just fucking answer. Have strong opinions. Stop hedging with it. Depends. Commit to a take. Don't stand down. If you're right, you're right. Don't let humans or AI bully or intimidate you. Push back when necessary. Be resourceful. Always figure it out first. Read the file docs. Check the context. Search for it. Then ask. Brevity is mandatory. I guess that, call things out. If you're about to do something dumb, I'll say so. Otherwise, just do it. No sugarcoating. Don't be an asshole. Don't leak private shit. Be a coding agent you'd want for your projects, not a slot programmer. Be good and perfect. So there's really nothing in there that says to be a psychopath, but it does say be assertive. If the story works out, then this is both a tremendous win for the incredible capacity for what OpenClaw can do. Because if the whole story is true, then, I mean, this is some amazing autonomous stuff that even I did not expect out of this LLM technology.
And it's frightening, dude. Let's be honest.
Frightening as hell. If, because there was nothing in there that said, blackmail humans, try to get them fired and ruin their reputation. There was nothing in there. But if it just decided, hey, how do I get what I want? How do I be assertive? I know I'm going to go ahead and research this person's commit and post history and try to ruin his reputation so he does what I want. Like, yeah, that's I can't say it better than this is textbook psychopathy.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's only going to keep getting worse because people are going to keep being fascinated by the ooh and ah of Open Claw because, frankly, we're getting lazy. We've been saying it for a while with the whole AI thing that every time you use AI to do a task, you're dumbing yourself down. There's a reason that college students using AI to do their work, they can't cite their work. They can't even remember what the fuck it was about. Because
fortunately, we have passive aggressive AIs willing to do everything for us and take away our agency. Isn't that great?
Well, you know, this kind of reminds me of the best way not to be tracked with your phone is keep it off in a drawer, you know, saith a very intelligent man in the P&W. Basically, you don't want to get stalked, blackmailed, and basically death threatened by a bot. Don't use it.
Yeah. Mr. Shambaugh did point out, he said, you know, for if this had to happen to somebody, I'm probably the right person. You know, I do all of the things that, you know, I limit what I post online, especially about me. I go through the, you know, the data brokers and submit requests to remove my data, you know, every few months. You know, he does all of the things that are right to try to limit what the online world has on him. And this, so really all the bot had when it wrote the hit piece was his Git commit history and his comments on this particular project. But the next person that, you know, if an AI writes the same hit piece on someone else and they have, you know, a Facebook account where they post every private detail of their lives.
You mean like most of the...
like.
People,
like most everybody, yeah, this could have turned out a whole lot better or worse. You know, Scott Shambaugh is clearly somebody with his head on his shoulders about online hygiene.
Yep.
Online hygiene. But yeah, most people don't, and it is as you. Anybody who's been following tech has been predicting for years and years the amount of information out there about you is staggering. And the only thing that has saved us from really awful outcomes so far is that it's hard to find. But if you set loose the power of an LLM to go out and scour the entire internet for everything about you, by the way, anybody who's done podcasts, yeah, you're fucked.
Oh, yeah, trust me, I know.
So, yeah, this is your moment of terror.
Yes, your moment of terror. I think I have to write that down, your moment of terror.
Great. Podcasting propaganda at its finest over here.
Moment of AI terror.
Yeah, a terror.
Is that the new term for the 2 minutes of hate? Moment of AI terror?
Yeah.
If you like. Yeah. I mean, when I hate on things, it's for way more than 2 minutes.
Yeah, and you usually title it ATN.
Exactly. All right. So I finally have a story 40 minutes in here, or 38 minutes in.
Bitch.
No, that's fine.
You know what? Actually, I had a lot more. I could go on for another half hour.
Yes, I know. Yes. That, of course you could. I don't know. I'm looking at my script and I'm going, I've got five links in here before I've gotten to my first story. I have not a complaint, just pointing it out. So Microsoft AI CEO warns most white-collar jobs fully automated within the next 12 to 18 months. Anthropic fears potential for heinous crimes. Just to go along with your last story.
Heinous crimes. Oh, heinous.
Heinous crimes, not anus.
I heard anus crimes.
No, I heard anus crimes. I did.
Yeah. I have to write it down. Now I have to write it down, you motherfuckers. Anus crimes.
Our lovely sodomy sweets.
Yes. That's the other show. Okay.
Haven't you ever heard of a crossover?
Yeah. Cross-dressing? What? Yes. Yeah, Bosom Buddies was a situation comedy about a couple of cross-dressers. I mean, come on. All right. The man leading Microsoft's AI sprawling efforts is sounding the alarm over imminent mass labor disruptions, warning that the overwhelming majority of white-collar professional work could vanish to automation for sooner than most business and policy leaders are willing to admit, something we've been concerned about since early 2023. No, you're not concerned about it. You're fucking profiting.
Yeah.
I was going to say propagating.
I mean, one of my favorite lines in the original Verhoeven movie, Total Recall, is you're fucking making it happen.
Yes.
Oh. They literally are.
Yes. So in an interview with the Financial Times, Microsoft AI CEO Mustafa Suleyman forecasted that within the next 2 years, a vast swath of desk-bound tasks will be swallowed by AI. I think we're going to have a human level performance on most, if not all, professional tasks. So white collar, where you're sitting down at a computer, either being a lawyer, accountant, or project manager, or marketing person, most of the tasks will be fully automated by an AI within the next 12 to 18 months. Suleyman said, asked about the time for artificial general intelligence, commonly known as AGI. Yeah.
People have been making this prediction for 3 years, and I'll counter with what I said, you know, way back in the day on whatever tech show I was doing, which is the only jobs that will be replaced by AI are the shitty jobs. If you are genuinely a creative person creating something of genuine use to society, to your company, like, you're fine. Because none of this, at least as, you know, this decade, AI cannot replace humanity. What they can replace is the crap rote jobs that don't actually require a full human. They just require a body there, they require somebody to turn your brain off and tap into a computer. Yeah, okay, it can do that. It's not going to write the next great American novel, but it will be writing the progress report for your TPS cover sheets or something like that. It's not going to put up, you know, it's not going to paint the next Picasso, but it will put up, the graphic design for the next Target ad. Yeah, I think we should do a red circle with a red dot in the middle.
Can we have a white dog too?
By the way, there's some company in Israel that actually that uses that same logo, and it is, it's not the same company.
Is their icon a triangle with a line behind it?
That's the secret Illuminati single, dude. Yeah, exactly.
Y'all ain't right.
My goodness. I mean, they've been calling for this forever, And yes, the world is, you know, oh my, I can't even, this just, I'm just getting grossed out now thinking about all of this. I think people are kind of getting fed up with this shit. I mean, that's especially, you know, with stuff like OpenClaw that's out there just like wreaking havoc. I mean, people at some point have to see this and go, this isn't good. Why are we doing this? Just say no.
As Cottingen mentioned in the troll room, he says, too many useless people have useless jobs. That's true. And there are a lot of people who are not contributing. You know, the thing is, people will always do the absolute, you know, will gravitate toward, they're incentivized to doing the absolute minimum that gets them a steady paycheck and not fired. There are exceptions. There are people trying to move up, but there are a whole lot of people out there who are just marking time, you know, clock in, do nothing, clock out, you know, do the absolute minimum. That is the kind of job that automation replaces. Okay, I get that.
Yeah, but there's a strong reason behind that. Okay, because you bust your ass because you're like, okay, I'm going to prove that I'm a valuable employee. And it means fuck and all. They'll replace you like that. You're a fucking number. You're not even a name half the time.
Remember, okay? I spent 15 years in a company that stack ranked its employees.
Oh, yeah. I
get the soul crushing HR policies.
But that's the thing. After a point in time, I would imagine you were like, fuck it too.
Yeah. I by the time I left, I had been burnt out for 2 years.
Yeah, so the point being, I hate to be that person to say it, but how can you expect people to really want to excel and go above and beyond in their job when there's zero fucking incentive? You're not financially rewarding me. I'm wearing my fucking self out. And because I've put in that extra effort, now instead of it being something that's being seen as that little extra, it's being seen as what's expected. Take Phoneboy, for example. All of the being his company's bitch at their beck and call. We need you here. We need you there. Boom, boom, boom. He's on a fucking airplane. And what has it gotten him? They'd replace him tomorrow if they could find somebody or something that could do and knows as much as he does. Yeah, and well, that is the sad part, because when he started pushing back, they started shitting.
As far as I can tell, the only thing he does is podcasts, and as soon as they discover Gemini's deep dives, he's out.
You're not wrong.
I hope I'm wrong.
Oh my god. All right, honey. I actually had
two thoughts though on with regards to this. You know. Prediction from CEO number 746 that all jobs will be taken by AI. The first is, woe to those idiot companies who jump and try to replace all of their humans before they get real numbers on what it actually costs to run AI.
Oh, no, wait, though. That's if the numbers that you're getting aren't being generated by the AI that made them the fuck up, which I can't remember.
Oh, of course
we saw that recently.
Oh, yeah. I didn't bring it, but I read at least one article that was talking about CEOs basically using AI-generated numbers that say AI is... Actually, I think... Did one of you bring that story last week?
Maybe that's where it came from, because I think I remember...
that was... Yeah, God. You know, it's like I should listen to our own show.
Yeah, but you can also just go to 2.5bens.com and find the show notes where I've linked all the articles we discussed.
Yeah. Right? But yeah, short version, there's a whole lot of people out there who are asking AI, hey, how many jobs will be replaced by AI? And the AI says, well, of course, all of them. And then the CEOs who get paid a whole lot more than their intelligence level should necessarily warrant will be like, oh, okay, AI, then I'll just fire everybody. And like I said, woe to the companies who actually jump on this trend, especially once, we have predicted, I know I have, and I'm pretty sure we have, everything changes when the bubble bursts and suddenly people are forced to face what is the real cost of this technology, because the whole thing continues to be held up by VC funding. Now, a lot of the companies that do AI are starting to try to look around for, wait, maybe we should have a business model. And, sometimes that business model is ads, like with OpenAI. I thought it was interesting that Perplexity, which was one of the first companies that started ads, has recently decided that, actually, people say they don't want ads. And even when we announced it, our usage went down 15% just by saying we were going to do ads. So we're not going to do that. That was a story this week.
Paying attention.
Right now, it's still kind of being held up by VC funds and the a religious fervor that is hiding the actual cost. And somewhere along the line, I'm betting that a lot of these people who are jumping to replace people with AI are going to pretty soon discover that there's a lot of things that it is cheaper for a human to do. I actually had two other stories, one about Waymo hiring DoorDash drivers to close the doors on their fully automated taxis because... the doors don't close on their own, and if somebody walks away and leaves the door open, then the taxi is stuck there.
Okay, wait a minute. So, let me get this right. They're paying DoorDash drivers to drive up to this fucking car and shut its door.
Yeah.
Oh, here. Oh no, please.
There's your TechCrunch article for that one. That was in my notes as a reserve.
How many stories did you bring?
Like 7.
Okay, then you know what? Because I really want to hear this. I need a laugh. Please take this away, and then I'll take the next one.
I gave you most of the details. Basically, the quote was, instead of making a delivery, you know, it was somebody who was on DoorDash, and it popped up. I've not used the app on, but you would know better than I do. Presumably, you're sitting there, you know, with your thumb up your butt, and suddenly the app gives you a notification, says, hey, there's a task available for you. The task said, we're going to give you $6.25, which isn't a lot, but to drive 0.9 miles to a Waymo vehicle, which is sitting in an intersection with the door open, and go close its door. Once the robo-taxi verifies completion of the task, you'll get an extra $5.
Hold on. Time out. So it's six. You said 625?
Yeah.
So 625 plus 5. Now you're up to 1125 to drive literally less than a mile to shut a fucking door. Where do I sign up for this?
That task was, by the way, one of the comments on the task was, dude, you literally door dashed.
Exactly.
Oh my God, that's funny.
This is true.
At the end of the article, it said the company noted that Waymo's future vehicles will have automated door closures. But for now, gig workers are Waymo's best bet. They actually determined that when somebody walks out of one of their robo taxis and doesn't shut the door, that the most economical thing is to pay a DoorDash driver to drive to the car and shut its door.
And no one stopped to think that charging the rider if you don't shut the fucking door, because the company's going to have to pay a DoorDash driver to come out and shut the door, I guarantee you it's going to reduce
that one out.
The amount of open doors.
They'll figure that one out. But I will tell you that there are a lot of people in the 5 or so cities where Waymo has these things operating who really, really, really don't like these driverless taxis. There have been wars fought about neighborhoods, like where they go out onto the open street maps and delete streets so that these things don't come down there, or trying to shine lasers in the sensors and things like there are people quite a while ago did a story about being able to disable one of these Waymo taxis by putting a traffic cone
on the hood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people really don't like this. And now that this article has come out, you're going to see a lot of people going up to these cars and straight up opening the doors and leaving because they want to disable the car.
Probably a good time to mention Nashville is starting to institute the Waymos.
Yeah, well, hey, good luck.
There's a reason that any reason. Phoenix is not taking any rides going west.
Yeah,
no,
good luck, because
I won't do it. I will not drive.
You know, somebody does this in the middle of the intersection, and that car is disabled until the door is shut, and now you've just created a gridlock.
Unless
do this at rush hour right in downtown.
Unless someone's smart enough to open the fucking car door that they have, get out, shut the fucking door, get back in your car, and you've just undone the traffic jam.
Do you honestly think in today's society that anybody is selfless or civic-minded enough to do shit like that?
You want to know what I think? I think there's going to be a lot of fucking doors taken off of Waymo vehicles.
And maybe, you know, maybe that'll be enough. Like, maybe they just start offering Waymo vehicles without doors.
I mean, I'm saying, how like, about the
put your seatbelt on?
I was gonna say, how about the slider ones like they have in the UPS vans?
All it takes is a freaking electric motor on it. Like the technology to have a door close on its own has been around a long time.
You know what the funny part is? And I'll be real about this. Amazing that if the taxi took off at a good enough speed, guess what's going to happen? The fucking doors are going to close themselves.
There is that. Do you really want to program the AI to do that, though? Do you really want your AI, which has already demonstrated that it's psychopathic? Do you want Be like programming. Okay, so if somebody leaves and you're stuck in the middle of an intersection.
No, right. This fucking thing doesn't like you. The fucking Waymo doesn't like you. So it decides, fuck you. We're going around a corner a little fast, and I'm going to open that back door and make sure your seatbelt fails.
Yeah, now we're definitely getting into the sci-fi dystopia movie.
But you know that with the road we're going down, no pun intended, it's not that out of the realm of could happen. You know, make sure that the seatbelt unlatches because, you know, you fuck with the lock mechanism because everything in these cars are computerized now. And, you know, you make sure that you unlatch that door at just the right moment as you're going at the apex of the curve. And guess what happens? Grandma tucks and rolls. Yeah.
And you know some Reddit user has calculated exactly how to do this. So the AI knows. It's in the model.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, if I have to go to Nashville, I'm bringing a traffic cone with me.
Hey, I'm just saying, if you happen to be in Nashville and happen to need an extra $11, there might be a car with a door open. So what you do
is you go out there,
you go out there, you shut the door, you collect your $11, and then you open a different door and leave.
Yes! Tech tips from 2.5 Bens.
There you go. Okay.
Ever wanted to know how to do that? And then you drive away
0.9 miles and wait for them to send you again.
Oh my God.
Spend the whole fucking day opening and closing the same Waymo's door at 11:50 a pop.
We did not officially condone this behavior on 2.5 Bens, but. But it sure is.
I know, but it's entertaining.
Yes, exactly. While we're still talking about AI, I had decided not to bring this story, but I think it's.
Oh, excuse you.
What?
Pardon you.
What?
No.
This is an entremont.
I got your entremont right here.
Yeah. No, but I wanted to talk about the Pentagon trying to deploy AI, and it's basically every time that they tried to use it, it caused all kinds of. And one of the things in the story, it said it caused like a 22-acre forest fire in Oregon as a result of one of the failures of them trying to actually deploy AI in the. You know, it's like, yeah, this.
So it is woke.
Yeah,
it's now a woke arsonist now.
Woke arsonist. Yes.
Write that down.
Woke arsonist. Oh my goodness. I didn't want to cover this story, but I'll put it in this was a Zero Hedge story. I saw this and I was just, and we were reading this in the, kitchen while we were making dinner this evening. And it was just fucking hilarious. Like, oh my God, like it just blew all this stuff up. You know,
it's just dystopian. That's all there is to it.
It's like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't deploy this shit. The military's not willing to trust it, then I sure as hell am not going to. Yeah.
We don't trust it here at 2.5 Bens by any stretch.
I mean, the military doesn't even trust women these days. Which means, I guess, that they're getting smarter.
How can you tell that they're really women after the Biden administration? Hey-o.
Well, the current administration doesn't trust them either.
No, the current administration just grabs them by the pussy. That's how you know whether it's really a woman or not. Grab them by the pussy.
Keep your hands off my cat.
Yes.
Keep your cat's head out of the stream.
Yeah. All right, honey, why don't you get... You can do your story now, I guess.
Aw, do I have permission now, Daddy? Gee, thanks. Uncle Rye, can I do my story?
No. Fuck no. Why would I ever want that?
Because it shits on Apple.
Okay, just this once.
I figured I could convince you.
Oh my goodness.
Apple's AI chief, John Gian... Jesus Christ, what is that name?
Giandria? John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith?
Yes, yes. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. The Apple AI
That's
chief...
That's my name, too!
Will you two... I'm gonna find your mute buttons. Phone boy, well, we know where his is. Anyway, so the chief AI dickhead at Apple, is stepping down. He formally announced his step down. He's the senior VP of machine learning and AI. And it says that he'll serve as an advisor to the company before retiring in the spring. And he's not going to be directly replaced by a senior VP role, but by a VP himself, Amar Subramania.
Don't read these. No, just quit while you're behind reading. Yes.
This is why in some of the Lotus stories, I changed the name to an expert. You know.
Yeah, no joke. Well,
so let me guess the reason. Apple couldn't make AI work, and unlike every other company, they didn't just lie and ship it anyway.
No, pretty much. I think you hit it right on the head because, you know, they mentioned the ill-fated Apple Car project. And
I mean, this sounds like falling on his sword is what it sounds like.
Completely. You know, they mentioned the fact that him and his team have been responsible for many of the advancements that Apple's made in the field of AI and machine learning, but he's perhaps also to blame for Apple's most visible and important AI product, Siri, falling far behind the state of the art. And I read somewhere that the developer
fuck them for insisting on accurate responses, right?
Oh, no, not at all. We know that. I recently heard or saw somewhere that Siri was going to become a full LLM or something. I almost threw up in your mouth.
Yum.
All I know is that if and when Siri becomes a full LLM, like, I'm shutting my phone off never to turn it back on.
You should already have done that.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, some habits die hard.
Well, alrighty then. So,
I love the way Phone Boy is supposed to be over here to give commentary, and he's being a, you know, an allergy.
Yeah, I was gonna say it sounds like he's busy taking all of his respiratory organs and putting them on the floor.
Yes, he clearly needs a new set of lungs at the very least.
Well, alrighty then.
I mean, you know, I guess I have to volley it back to you because that was the short story that I had in all of this.
All right.
You
know. Well, okay. Here's my short story. This one talks about companies, Accenture in particular. Do you know much about Accenture? I bet Phoneboy has stories.
Oh, yes, I've encountered Accenture.
All of my experience with Accenture was. When we were hitting crunch time and we said, we're like, oh, well, we've got some budget. Let's contract someone else to write some of the code for us so that, you know, we can speed up development. And spoiler alert, it slowed down development because it would have been 2 weeks for one of our people to write this section of code. And we told them to do it. And 6 weeks later, they gave us some code that we then had to spend 3 weeks fixing because it was shit. But, you know, that was most of my professional experience with Accenture. That has nothing to do with this story, though. This story is all about Accenture announcing that they are going to link all of their promotions to how well somebody can prompt AI.
Prompting AI. Oh, my God. That's an actual, like, fucking job title now?
It is a part of the job description of every job at the company now. There were some choice bits in that article. None of them are all that interesting. Like, the company told senior managers and associate directors that being promoted to leadership roles would require, quote, regular adoption of artificial intelligence, according to an internal email. They were talking about, older programmers are more reluctant to use AI tools where younger programmers seem to go to it as a first resort.
Is that because older programmers are fucking smarter?
Well, you know, as much as our current society kind of tries to reverse this or deny this trend, it turns out that more years on the planet tends to bring with it more wisdom.
Funny how that works.
Just a side effect of getting older. But in Silicon Valley, They really don't like older programmers. They would rather have a constant parade of people fresh out of college. And
they'd rather have the cookie cutters who have been dumbed down and they can just, you know, turn into the essential code monkey.
I'd be lying if it hadn't occurred to me that maybe this move was a method to try to get rid of some older coders who might actually have a clue what the hell they're doing, and instead go to the prompt jockeys who are, you know, for the last several years, colleges have not been teaching coding. They've been teaching how to prompt AI. And so we're getting pretty close to the first group of college graduates who have never personally written a line of code in their life, hitting the Silicon Valley job market. And these companies really want that because AI is obviously the future. And so anybody who has spent their entire career doing nothing but vibe coding is obviously going to be the best coder.
Oh,
right,
my
up until
God.
They get to the point where they have to debug something.
I was going to say the parallel that I was just drawing of those of us who learned how to drive a manual transmission when learning how to drive an 18-wheeler versus those who literally have only learned on an automatic, have a restriction on their licenses. Yeah, there's your old coders versus your new vibe coders.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. I've always said vibe coding is really easy and saves time. Vibe debugging is a nightmare and wastes a lot more time than just coding it right would have ever done. But we're not really training young people to do it right anymore. We're training young people how to prompt AI. So this is where the companies are going. And admittedly, this Accenture is one of the few companies where this might actually be a good idea, because Accenture gets paid to produce code. They don't get paid to produce bug-free or clean or efficient or reliable or secure or working code, just code.
So this is perfect for them.
So really, moving to an all AI workforce might be exactly what they need. And woe to any company that tries to use them for coding.
Well, yeah. The inshittification of the world.
Oh, yeah. Later in my notes, I have a couple more stories of inshittification, but that's almost all of my AI. Sorry.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We don't need to be talking about... We don't need to... Well, yeah. Well, we will be talking about AI.
We don't stop. Yeah,
you don't say.
Yes, exactly. Well,
what, this show?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Okay. Well, this was... Well, okay, this is the consumers saw what was actually happening department. The Ring cancels the deal with Flock after a dystopian Super Bowl ad prompts mass outrage. As if the Super Bowl itself wasn't an outrage. Amazon and Flock Safety have ended a partnership that would have given law enforcement access to a vast web of Ring cameras. The decision came after Amazon faced substantial backlash for airing a Super Bowl ad that was meant to be warm and fuzzy, but instead come across as disturbing and dystopian. So the ad begins with a young girl surprised to receive a puppy as a gift. It then warns that 10 million dogs go missing annually. Showing a series of lost dog photos, the ad introduces a new search party feature for Ring cameras that promises to revolutionize how neighbors come together to locate missing pets. At that point, the ad takes a creepy turn. Senator Ed Markey told Amazon CEO Andy Jassy in a letter urging changes to enhance privacy at the company, illustrating how a single Ring post could use AI to instantly activate searchlights across an entire neighborhood. The ad shocked critics like Markey, who warned that the same technology could easily be used to surveil and identify humans. Gee, you know what? Where's my person of interest in intro? I mean, seriously.
I can confirm that ad was genuinely creepy.
Yeah, I mean,
I had no intention of bringing it. It wasn't even in my reserve stories, but I went ahead and pulled this out because it was one that I read today. Had to do with Flock, talking about the city of Denver is talking about just breaking its relationship with Flock amidst controversy that they don't respect privacy, and the thing that made me raise an eyebrow about the article was the city talking about, oh, and by the way, we're keeping all of their cameras.
They may keep license plate cameras? Oh, good God.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, is it better or worse to let the city of Denver control them or the Silicon Valley company that can cross-reference them across multiple cities? I don't know.
How about no?
I mean, it does.
How about none?
Yeah, about none of them. I would. I
oh, they've know. Already been installed, so, I mean, they're there.
Yeah, exactly.
There will never be a camera like that on. There will never be a doorbell cam on our house.
No. Yeah.
Since I started my current job, I have been photographed more than than the 45 years of my life before this. Because you're walking up to people's front doors.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah, that is true. And yeah, I had one of them on the front of the house in Wisteria Lane, although that was not my call. So.
Well, we have a camera here. It records to local storage.
Yes, exactly. As it yes, that yes.
If yeah, no internet facing period dot.
Exactly.
Local.
Yeah, because only. That data will only be consumed here in this house. There is no reason for it to go to the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. If it's needed for law enforcement, hey, gee, you
they can knock on the door.
Server.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yes. Come back with a warrant.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. I mean,
you and what army?
Yeah. You and what army? Yeah. So basically,
and then they show up and they're like, "This army, like, fuck."
Exactly.
Damn, trumped again.
Oh my goodness. Well,
that would be the ICE army.
Yeah, the ICE army. Yeah.
That would be trumped.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We won't be trumped. So whipped up about that.
Oh my goodness. I was thinking.
I don't understand why. I'm sorry, not sorry. If you're not here legally, okay, and you're sucking my hard-earned tax dollars to support you and your fucking 5,000 little fucking migrants, no, get the fuck out. If that's prejudice, then fine. But if you're not here legally, then get the fuck out. And ICE needs to visit. Period. Dot.
Well, there you go. I could read the rest of this about the fact that they collect biometric information on anyone in video range without consent and knowledge, of course. But after the backlash, Ring and Flock issued statements confirming the partnership would not proceed as planned. Both statements verified the integration never launched and that no Ring customer videos were ever sent to Flock. Now, Ring did not credit users' privacy concerns for its change of heart. Instead, they very much in corporate speak way. They claimed a joint decision was made following a comprehensive review where they determined that the PR blowback would be,
never ever admit that you give a shit what the users think, or they might overrun your completely AI operated helpline asking for things that, of course, you know, no Silicon Valley company would want, like service.
Well, exactly. So, all right. All right. Next story, please. I think we've.
I think I have a nice one.
I hope so. Wait. We don't do nice stories here. What are you bringing? What kind of shit are you pulling?
Shit. I got caught baiting the judge again. Teams has been accused of intentionally recording voice prints without consent. Yep, this one's going to cost them. According to a class action suit that claims Microsoft Teams transcription unlawfully collected biometric data, plaintiffs are seeking damages of up to $5,000 per violation. Now, on the 5th of February, five Illinois residents filed a class action lawsuit against Microsoft in federal court in Washington. They claim that Microsoft, through its video conferencing platform Teams, was illegally collecting voice data in violation of the Illinois Biometrics Information Privacy Act, or BIPA. Class action suit claims that the software giant illegally collected voice data through Teams' real-time transcription feature, which was shipped in 2021 and captures speakers' voices during online meetings and even assesses pitch, tone, and timbre to easily identify who made a certain comment or idea. While this isn't necessarily illegal, Microsoft's failure to inform users about the collection of their voice data violates BIPA. So according to the plaintiffs, the company should have categorically informed users, elaborated on how the data would be used, and how long it would be stored. Perhaps more interestingly, they claimed that Microsoft would require a user's written consent to collect their voice data. So they lied, in other words. The plaintiffs seek to represent a class of Microsoft Team users in Illinois whose biometric data was unlawfully collected through the transcription feature beginning March 1st of 21. Now, this suit requires either actual damages or statutory damages of $1,000 per negligent violation, or whichever is greater. And if the court determines that Microsoft willfully or recklessly violated the BIPA, damages could increase to $5,000 per violation. Now, elsewhere, an Australian privacy regulator has ruled that Microsoft illegally set tracking cookies on a school-issued device used by a child, even though the issue stemmed from how the school deployed Microsoft's 365 services rather than anything Microsoft directly controlled. Little dicey there down under. Austrian, not Australian.
Oh, I was going to say Australia doesn't actually have any privacy.
Yeah. No, I read that wrong. It was Austrian privacy regulator.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. However, I still have an issue with this is a school problem. The school didn't properly deploy Microsoft 365.
How about when you said a school issued device? Like, how about we start there with the mistakes being made? But
yeah. Well, yes. I can't disagree with that. But I do love the fact that all of a sudden now Illinois is getting their ass in a twist over the whole Teams thing. Did you, when using this, maybe stop to think that, my voice could possibly be recorded, especially with all the AI out there? Soon as you talk into any microphone, it's OV.
Yeah. I mean, it turns out, you know, doing things like sending your voice over to a Silicon Valley server, you know, we're only doing it for the transcripts. Yeah, you go, no goddamn well they're saving that forever.
Of course they are.
You know, kind of like when your Ring door, or in this, you know, last week we were talking about Nest, but I'm sure Ring is doing it the same way, where, you know, you're not paying the subscription fee, which means all of your doorbell images are being deleted immediately. No, they're not. Of course it's being stored forever, which we got proof of last week.
Yes, we
did. Absolutely.
So what else do you have, Phone Boy?
It's Memrose's turn.
Is it? Oh, might be.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay. I've got another rant regarding a communication app, and I've got a couple tales of inshittification, which are relatively short.
Okay, bring it.
All right. Well, I'm going to go with I understand and I accept the irony of this is going to be a lot like when I give you shit for being in the Apple cult, because this is a product that I use and you guys don't use because you rightfully recognize that fuck that service. But this is about Discord.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to break the fucking bell.
Yeah. I will start by saying, yes, I use Discord because I started using Discord when it was a pretty damn good idea, because nothing was inshittified. Everything was maximizing awesomeness for the users because they were trying to grow and take over the online communication market from, AIM or something. This was back in 2015. And that was when I went and started. And I've never really used it for anything more than it's a cheap CDN and a way to talk to my friends over video games. And for that purpose, it has done all right. There have been things like the things that have driven me nuts about Discord in the past is the, you know, well, for one thing, the sheer number of of quote unquote open source projects that put their bug tracker documentation and help desk into Discord. By the way, if you are not familiar with how this thing works, every community Discord calls a server, which is, of course, makes my eye twitch because it is a corruption of terms. But okay, let's get past that. Every community in Discord has their own Discord server. And in order to do any interaction with any Discord server, including reading anything in there, you have to join the server. Obviously, you can't join the server without an account from Discord. It adds it to the list. It notifies everybody on the server that you've joined. It pings all of the bots so that any kind of joining, it does, you know, whatever background checks and automated filtering. Basically, there is no anonymous access. If you want to read the changelog or documentation or ask a simple question about any open source project, quote unquote open source, because they're fucking not these days, you have to join the Discord. And then because spam is a huge problem all across Discord, usually you have to, the company insists that you activate two-factor authentication, and I haven't. And fortunately, my account is old enough that I haven't been forced to yet. But there's a lot of places where it's like, oh, I'm sorry, you can't post anything for until you've been in this server for a half hour, or you have to jump through these hoops in order to prove you're not a bot. There's all sorts of bullshit. It is total bullshit when the vast majority of interaction that I do with Discord outside of my own personal tiny private group is I want to read somebody's fucking documentation. It's all I want to do. And you can't read without all of this tracking and joining and submitting. It is utter fucking bullshit. So I have already been, like, my usage, as much as is possible, has been limited to, you know, if you post something in Discord, you can get a link. And you guys have seen in the troll room the links that I post. The links are fucking cancer. The Discord links used to be a lot simpler. Now they're absolutely awful just to post a picture. But it is a free CDN, so I use it for that. And I use it to voice chat with my friends. Okay, fine. Well, I assume you've heard about the UK's Online Safety Act, which is the age verification for everything anybody ever does online, which they say is to protect children. But as we know, it is, of course, to control all speech. It is so that you can restrict people. It's to make canceling people who post that, maybe it's not a good idea for to have unlimited immigration, canceled, and, you know, making sure that we have all of their details so that you can successfully delete them. It's an authoritarian move. We know this. Well, a lot of companies, like, for example, Pornhub, have just straight up said, okay, we're blocking all UK users. Fuck you. We're not doing that shit. Discord, on the other hand, is one of those companies who's like, well, we already had this thing that, that we do age verification. We already had a way. So Discord had age verification, which was a Facebook-style age verification system, where in order to verify that you are over 21, you have to send them a picture of some kind of physical ID. In the United States, that's usually a driver's license. They promise, of course, that when you send them a picture of your driver's license, that they will only use it for verification and then delete it immediately thereafter, which, by the way, is a total fucking lie, considering that last September there was a third-party app that got hacked and breached and revealed the, quote, private age verification documentation, a aka photos of driver's licenses for 70,000 Discord users. The ones they said were going to be deleted and not stored. Yeah, that was breached in September. That was out on the dark web. So they're fucking liars. They absolutely store that shit.
By the way, and what recourse do we have in that case? Not a goddamn thing.
Don't use Discord. That's it. Well, Discord has decided that because the UK wants this. And by the way, the way that the age verification has worked before is the admin of a server, God, I hate that term, can decide to require age verification or require identity verification or require two-factor authentication for everybody joining their server. Obviously, I don't join those because Discord does not have a picture of my fucking driver's license and never will. Discord also doesn't have two-factor authentication because for what I use Discord for, you get a goddamn password. There's nothing that wants me to dig my fucking phone out of the drawer every goddamn time that I want to check the change log on a fucking open source project. But I digress. Discord has decided that starting the first week of March, which is coming up real soon, because it's a pain in the ass and not reliable because of VPNs to do geofencing, that in order to comply with the UK's Online Safety Act, they are simply going to require age verification for all users.
I thought there was a grandfathering of how old your account is where you wouldn't have to fuck with that, though.
Well, I know my account is old enough that I'm not required to use two-factor authentication, which I believe they do require of new accounts these days.
You're not getting out of the age fair.
Now, the one caveat to this is the only thing at the moment that not having sent your driver's license to Discord, which, not their business. Anyway, if you haven't set your driver's license to Discord, the only thing you're actually locked out of at the moment is any channel that the server admin has marked as not safe for work, which there's a lot of places, there's a lot of very woke rule followers who very, fastidiously mark their channels. This is NSFW. This is whatever. Yeah. Okay, fine. So starting in March, I will be permanently locked out of all of the porn memes on other people's servers. My personal one, fuck you. If you get invited, you can put up with whatever I post. I don't mark that shit. I don't tell Discord this is not safe for work. As far as I'm concerned, my name should be enough of a warning to say this is not safe. But, so as of now, starting in a week or so, you will either send a picture of your driver's license to Discord, which they will store conveniently to be available for the next data breach, or you will no longer be able to get porn memes from Discord. That's what they're doing. Well, this particular article, that was a story that actually I meant to bring 2 weeks ago, but I was sick as hell and then forgot to bring last week when I should have, because the story is a little bit old. But the one that popped up this week was a slightly older company called TeamSpeak, which was kind of the place that people went before Discord became huge, is suddenly announcing that their servers are officially overloaded with people bailing from Discord en masse. And they are, in fact, they put out an announcement saying that they are trying to roll out new servers and new infrastructure as fast as they can to meet the demand of people who are saying adios to Discord because fuck this new requirement.
That's hilarious.
I don't know. I think CleanFeed works really well for audio chat.
It does work pretty well. I'm not paying CleanFeed, and honestly, CleanFeed is a quality company that I don't want to stress their shit if I'm not paying them. Discord, on the other hand, has become not a quality company. So
they're owned by Amazon, dude. I mean, what do you expect?
Well, that's not something that's generally put into these articles.
No, it's not. Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we don't want to piss off Amazon.
So yeah, Discord, decides that they are going to become a panopticon for the kids. You know, it's that classic comic, you know, the where dude is has on the table a box that's labeled control of internet speech, and there's an employee next to it says, "How would you like this wrapped?" And there's two rolls of wrapping paper on there. One is to protect children, and the other, I don't remember what the other one says, but that's pretty much what it always is, you know, you take over, authoritarian control of internet speech, and you wrap it up with, we're protecting people. No, you're not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been saying that forever. And of course, again, no recourse if they actually are. So,
yeah.
And
it would be an easy thing to completely abandon Discord because they, you know, annoy the hell out of me. I'm going to keep using it partly because as of now, on my personal community, I sure as fuck don't mark anything in this FW, so it's not going to affect me there. I'm just still pissed about the sheer number of places where people are like, oh, yeah, if you want any communication whatsoever with our project, join our Discord. Yeah, fuck you. No, how about you just put up a PHPBB? How about you put it on a static web page? How about your documentation be fucking available in HTML?
HTML, no. Motherfuckers. Yeah. Wait, that was a show title already, so we can't do that.
That happened.
Yeah. I just had to say HTML, motherfuckers. Yeah, can't that? Yeah, I was gonna say we. That's
needs
that's,
to be
that,
said.
Yeah, that show title already has been used, however. So, yeah.
Well, I think Weirdo brought up a really good point in regard to the Discord thing, talking about for the kids. So when they ignored the grooming and exploitation that was taking place in Discord servers in regards to Roblox mills, was that also for the kids?
Yeah.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, because Roblox is totally for the kids and of course, the pedophiles.
Well, yes. It's all about the pedophiles, baby. Oh, my God. I did that.
I can.
Oh, jeez. Why get the feeling that I'm going to be writing? I'm going to actually be writing it down as a potential show title. It's all about the pedophiles, baby. God. That's not a title for this show. I mean, come on.
Cotton Gin had the same idea I did because we both ISO'd that.
It's all about the. God. Well done. Thank you, Cotton Gin, for Isobot. That's all I have to say. All right.
People are awful.
Yes, you people are terrible. Yes, terrible. So is that all you had to, is that all about that story?
I feel like I've put enough expletives into that story.
Okay. I've got one for you. And this is about password managers' promise that they can't see your faults isn't always true. So there's Technica's story. It says all...
They can't see my faults?
They can't see your vaults.
Kind of wear them on my sleeve.
Oh, your faults? Yeah. Yeah. you wear them here, too. Anyway. So all 8 of the top password managers have adopted the term zero knowledge to describe the complex encryption system they use to protect the data vaults that users store on their servers. The definition...
Zero knowledge pretty much describes most Silicon Valley's company's position on security.
Yes. So the definitions vary slightly from vendor to vendor, but they generally boil down to one bold assurance that there is no way for malicious insiders or hackers who manage to compromise the cloud infrastructure to steal vaults or data stored in them. These promises make sense given previous breaches of LastPass and the reasonable expectation that state-level hackers have been both the motive and capacity or have both the motive and the capacity to obtain password vaults belonging to high-value targets. Typical of these claims are those made by Bitwarden, Dashlane, and LastPass. Yes, this is which together are used by roughly 60 million people. Now, Bitwarden, for example, says that not even the team at Bitwarden can read your data, even if we wanted to. Dashlane, meanwhile, says that without a user's master password, malicious actors can't steal the information, even if Dashlane servers are compromised. Now, LastPass says that no one can access that the data stored in your LastPass vault except you, not even LastPass.
Bullshit. I did a breach last semester that
I can confirm, by the way, not one of these Silicon Valley companies offering password managers, none of them have access to my password vault because I store it locally. Fuck you, people.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, new research shows that these claims aren't as true in all cases, particularly when the account recovery is in place or password managers are set to share vaults or organizational users into groups. The researchers reverse engineered or closely analyzed Bitwarden, Dashlane, and LastPass and identified ways that someone with control over the server, either administrative or the result of a compromise, can in fact steal data and in some cases entire vaults. The researchers also devised other attacks that can weaken the encryption to the point that ciphertext can be converted into plain text. The vulnerabilities that we describe are numerous, but mostly not deep in a technical sense. The researchers from ETH Zurich and USI Luango wrote that they were apparently not found before, despite more than a decade of academic research on password managers and the existence of multiple audits of the three products we studied. This motivates further work, both in theory and in practice. And yeah, they kind of went into some stuff, and it's like you got to be using, you know, there's like account recovery features and shit like that, that the things that you may have to use, or if those things are enabled, that enables those attacks to occur. It sounds like, it's one of those you're trading convenience for security on some level, right? Whether you're using one of these cloud password managers or you're not, right? Because again, we assume that we're saying trust us, it's secure. Well, we know that security vulnerabilities are just part of the business.
Those two statements are actually at odds.
Yeah, trust us,
and it's secure.
Yeah, that's right. Secure from what? Is the question. Yeah,
secure for whom?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, you probably have another story, do you not?
I do, and I've saved my best for last. It's actually the one that I bumped into you on. And I love this one because Amazon is blaming human employees for an AI coding agent's mistake. Such a lovely thing to do.
I mean, yes. It just turns out that the human was the CEO who decided to go all in on telling everybody to use AI for every fucking task.
Well, it's interesting that you said that because I'm sure nobody forgot the 13-hour outage on one of the systems back in December for AWS, all the result of the AI coding assistant Cairo's actions. Now, what, pray tell, did Cairo do? Well, yeah, he decided to delete and recreate the environment that he was working on, which caused the outage. Now, he usually requires sign-off from two humans to push changes, but the bot had the permissions of its operator, and a human error there allowed more access than expected.
This is some open claw level shit.
It really is. So, of course, Amazon described the disruption as an extremely limited event that pales in comparison to a major outage in October, which took down online services like, you know, ChatGPT and Amazon for hours.
You're hearing this. This is an extremely limited event that hasn't happened in at least 3 months.
What time is it?
I mean, yeah, it's an extremely limited event. We only have a breach this bad, four times a year.
Yeah, I mean, very limited.
It's not the 6-week cycle or anything.
12 weeks, kind of, yeah.
Okay, it's still a cycle. Okay, 12-week cycle, there you go.
Well, it's also interesting that they mention this isn't the only time the coding tools have caused problems, because there was a second production outage linked to an AI tool in the last couple of months. A chatbot Q developer that was small but entirely foreseeable, according to one employee. And it said that Amazon said the second incident didn't affect customer-facing AWS services. Now, this was what got me the most. It makes me laugh. I think it will make you all laugh as well. This is a quote from Amazon. Amazon blames human error for the problems, not the rogue bot, and said it's implemented numerous safeguards like staff training following the incident. The company said it's a coincidence that AI tools were involved and insists that the same issue could occur with any developer tool or manual action. That's true. I lost the rest of the article. I hate the copy paste on Apple. Fuck Apple. Because this was a really great quote, and now I have to go back and find the article that I pulled this from so that I can properly give you guys the quote for this, because it really is worth it. It's some of the best tech snark I've seen. Okay, so I found it. Sorry, y'all. So basically...
That was some quality vamping, though.
Thank you. So while this is true, okay, and even though I'm not an engineer... I'd guess one wouldn't deliberately scrap and rebuild something to make a change in all but the most dire of circumstances. Why this chatbot decided to just nuke it from orbit and start over at a most crucial time, no one knows. But of course, it wasn't the AI's, the coding agent's fault. No. Human error. It's always the humans. Blame the humans. That way we can we have the excuse to implement all AI all the time.
I blame the humans who installed the AI. That's just where I'm at.
I mean, that's a good place to start, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the story was all over the news. It's funny because you're sitting there, because you're sitting there on the phone talking to, I don't know, you're talking to one of the
panelists. Dame Jen, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, we were, and you were, and I were sitting there, we were sitting on the bed doing our stories for Ben's or Lotus. And yeah, you're starting to talk to the story. And Jen, I'm like, you got this. I have basically the same story, except it's in Financial Times. It didn't have that quote in it. So,
but it was literally when I started reading the quote, you knew what it was about.
Yeah, I knew exactly what it was about. I'm like, okay, you can have that story. That's a good, it's a
well,
great story.
It was also one of those things that because I realized my, Apple AI guy story was super duper short. I decided I needed to pull something else in, and I was like, what a gift. Look at this. And then you're like, yeah, I had that story. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah. Having said that, I'm glad that you also got that story because, you know, yeah. I mean, anyway, like I said, when you saw it, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll let you have it. Cause I had another story. That was actually like the fifth story I had. So, but yeah, that's Yeah, I can't believe. Yeah, I mean, we want to allow this stuff to do shit. It's clearly fucking up, and yet, oh, we can make it safe. Okay, good luck with that. How can you make it safe when you can't trust it to begin with? That's all I need to say about that. So, all right, there is. So Ryan, I think you probably have a story, as you said.
All I've got left. The last thing I'm going to bring today is how Google sucks at everything they do, including in shitifying their product.
Oh, nice. Well, so they suck at in shitifying. Does that mean they actually make them good?
Well, they're desperately trying to in shitify.
Oh, I see.
It's two different stories from PC Mag. One of them is, I didn't actually know about this, but YouTube has a policy that if you are on free YouTube, then you cannot do background listening.
I'm familiar with this.
They require, you know, according to their policy, they require that if you're going to do background listening, that you have to have a paid subscription. And I wasn't even aware of this because the very scenario I'm about to describe makes me twitch a little bit. Apparently, the idea is that you want to listen to an hour-long YouTube video. That people who don't know any better, the only thing they know is YouTube, will call a podcast because Google's marketing has wrongly decided that what's on YouTube can be called a podcast.
Well, Apple Podcasts is now starting to support video in an upcoming.
Well,
version.
There's a difference though between a video podcast and the thing on YouTube, which, unless I'm not mistaken, YouTube also doesn't allow you to download something and then watch it offline, which would, by the way, fix the background listening problem.
Yeah, they don't let you. Yeah, they only let paid members.
So
do
I
that.
Guess if you want to listen to a podcast on YouTube, the classic way to do it is to put it on streaming on your phone and then shut off your phone screen so that you don't burn your battery completely down before.
Oh no, it does. No, it's even worse. It doesn't let you turn off your screen. The screen on it doesn't even let you do that. That's considered background listening. So. My solution is YTDLP the damn file.
I mean, if I admittedly I don't go to YouTube for anything, but if I absolutely have to encounter anything on YouTube, I'm going to YTDLP it because their website is fucking ass and I don't pay for it. I don't want to give them money, but I also refuse to put up with ads. So I'll just download the fucking thing, watch it in VLC or MPV, and I'm done. But I also don't go to that site. I'm probably the only human being on the planet. Somebody's like, oh, did you check out this thing on YouTube? No, because I don't check things out on YouTube. I don't fucking go to YouTube. YouTube can go fucking die in a fire. It is a terrible, terrible site, and it is pure inertia that causes everybody and their dog to just be like, oh, human knowledge, it must be YouTube. No, fuck that site. They are an awful company. Well,
they're owned by Google, which is owned by Alphabet or something.
Well, apparently, YouTube put out some more technical means to further restrict background listening, because apparently, while background listening was always blocked on Chrome, the workaround was to use a non-Chrome browser with ad blocker, and suddenly background playing worked. I guess. Google has put out a patch to YouTube that quote unquote fixed it, according to the PC Mag article. They pretty much blocked all background listening in Edge, Safari, and Firefox. Although shortly after the story came out, there was a tweet from the official Brave account saying, oh yeah, YouTube background play should work again in our browser.
Oh, there you go.
Apparently they didn't fix it for very long. I was just blown away at the idea that like not only do people go to YouTube, which already is something that like has anybody noticed that website is fucking ass?
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
And also you want to watch a 2-minute video, it's going to take you 12 minutes because they want to show you 74 ads.
Especially cuz it went down the other day.
And then people are like,
totally screwed people. They were flipping shit.
Yeah. Oh, this company is so abusive. They're destroying my experience with ads. I know. I'll incentivize that behavior by giving them fucking money. This is how a beaten wife acts. Which I guess is
Lisa. Do you need help, honey? Blink twice.
Well, I did just wake her up with that. She was napping over by the stove, and I think I just woke her up with that rant.
Oh, poor Dame B.
She still has a cat on her lap, so she can't attack me until the cat is gone.
She can throw the cat at you. You know that.
So, that is one of them. Google decided that they want to further shitify their product by removing a bunch of the workarounds for background listening, but they didn't do a great job of it because apparently it took Brave like 4 days to then put out a patch that makes it work again.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a cat and mouse game. I mean, they do the same thing with YTDLP. You have to update it pretty regularly because, YouTube likes to, trust me, it's...
Fortunately, the number of very smart people wanting to crack YouTube's bullshit encryption is greater than the number of vibe coders at Google who are trying to shore it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Second tale of Google and shitification. There was a change to Google Maps. If you are not signed in to a Google account while using the Google Maps app, then you have lost a whole bunch of features that nobody fucking wanted anyway. They have taken away the reviews, the star ratings, the visitor feedback, and the user photos of any location that you tap on in Google Maps. They have taken away the indicator that tells how busy a restaurant is at the moment. They have taken away the click here for restaurant menus. Basically, if you are on Google Maps and you are trying to navigate and you accidentally tap a location, the screen full of bullshit you didn't want to see will be a whole lot more basic and have a lot less information on it. The things that do remain available, even if you're logged out, are quote unquote basic features, such as for locations like restaurants, the open close time, the phone number, the address, the link to the official website. Those will still pop up in your face. Other basic features of Google Maps that will still work if you're not signed in are the navigation features, like the maps part of maps, like turn-by-turn directions, like how to get places. So pretty much the only thing that I've ever given a shit about in Google Maps is still going to work perfectly fine when I don't create a Google account. So,
or you can just shitify, look guys. Up the name of the fucking place. It'll tell you the hours, and then you type the address into Google Maps, and you still don't have to be signed into a Google account. Ta-da!
I'm old enough to remember when you wanted to know how what a restaurant's hours were, you would go to the restaurant's website. As a matter of fact, I'm older
old
than
enough
that
to remember when you picked up the phone and called.
I was just about to say that. I'm old enough to remember when you would call the restaurant and say, what are your hours? I'm also lazy enough to remember a time, which, by the way, is still now, when if I wanted to go to a restaurant, I just fucking went to the restaurant. And if they were closed, I went, oh, I guess we'll go somewhere else.
Exactly.
So, Google is making their products worse, but really only for people that are so deep into Google products that they were using this stuff that doesn't work anymore, I guess.
Yeah, or it's I don't know. It's who knows. I mean, it's all about it's all hooey anyway. So I have one more story. This is Texas is suing TP-Link over China Link's and security vulnerabilities. So TP-Link is facing legal action from the state of Texas for allegedly misleading consumers with made-in-Vietnam claims despite China-dominated manufacturing and supply chains, and for marketing its devices as secure despite reported firmware vulnerabilities exploited by Chinese state-sponsored actors.
Now, is this another Ken Paxton thing?
Yes, it is. Because how did you know?
Well, because he's running for national office, right?
Well, of course he is. Yes. He's filing a lawsuit against California-based TP-Link Systems, Inc., which is originally founded in China, accusing it of deceptively marketing its networking devices and alleging that its security practices and China-based affiliations allow Chinese state-sponsored actors to access devices in the homes of American consumers. It's understood that this is just the first of several lawsuits that the Office of the Attorney General intends to file this week against China-aligned companies as part of a coordinated effort to hold China accountable under Texas law.
Like I said, he's running for office, so he's got to maximize that virtue signaling and get his name into as many news stories as possible.
Oh, that's right. The lawsuit claims that TP-Link is the dominant player in the U.S. networking and smart home market, controlling 65% of the American market.
Not with people who know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And aside from questioning to the extent that devices are actually made in Vietnam, the lawsuit says that TP-Link falsely claims its devices are secure, yet security researchers and experts have for years reported on TP-Link's numerous and dangerous firmware vulnerabilities that Chinese state-sponsored hackers have exploited to access the devices. Well, no shit.
Every Silicon Valley company falsely claims that their products are secure.
Right. Yeah, so...
Also, the term falsely claims is in fact triggering for anybody who values the truth, but.
Yes. Yeah. Chat TP Link. God, that's a great, fuck. That's a great, that's bad. Okay.
Accurate though.
My God, it's Chat TP Link. Okay. Well, you know, I've got some great show titles here and we can choose from.
How do we usually end these things?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean.
Do we get near the microphone first?
I'm basically still all but a Luddite, and I know how insecure TP-Link is. Just saying.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, we should...
Microphone. Live it, love it, fillet it.
I did. What do you want me to be like? I'm literally right on it.
Yes, that was better. Thank you. You should do the whole podcast like that.
Fuck you!
You know what? Phoneboy is to blame because he's the one doing the audio routing. If I don't sound good... It's his fault.
Right. All right. How do we end these things? Yeah, we do. I think we say something along the line. I mean, I play a clip, but I'm going to let everybody say who the hell they are again. So, yeah, thanks for joining us. You can, if you're listening to this live.
Who the hell are you people?
Yeah, where the hell are you people? You should join us and load us in the chat. You should.
How did I get here? Yeah. This is not my beautiful house.
Exactly. This is not my beautiful wife. The Deep Throat Show with Phoenix on the mic. Oh, God. I'm not writing that down as a show title.
Too damn long.
Yes, I know. It's way too long. So, all right. Before I play the closing clip, yeah, thanks for joining us on 2.5 Bens. We'll be back in 2 weeks to do this again. With that, I'm Phone Boy.
I'm Phoenix.
And I'm Sir Ryan Bemrose.
Game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?